The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Irish trainer Willie Mullins has a list of incredible accolades to his name. This year he became the first trainer to surpass 100 wins at Cheltenham. His target, it now stands at 103 for anyone who wants to try to best him, which is very unlikely. He is the most successful trainer ever in Ireland. He has more winners than anybody else. He holds the record for the number of winners in a single Cheltenham festival. 10 is that number, and that will be hard to surpass. He is the first Irish-based trainer to win the British National Hunt title in 70 years for the 2023-24 season. And last night, he was recognised at the Business and Finance Awards for his unparalleled achievements and outstanding contribution to Ireland. And Willie Mullins joins me on the line. Willie, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Did you stay late?
A little after you left. And yeah. I must congratulate you. That was fantastic the way you went. You handled the awards last night. Really, it was so good.
I scarpered quickly after the awards because I knew I had to be talking to you today. I wanted to be fresh.
Good, good.
Yeah. Now, when does your day typically start, Willie?
Well, the yard opens up about 6 o'clock in the morning with staff coming in, and they get all the morning stuff done. And then I'd meet them on the gallop about 8 o'clock, which is, you know, nice. It's getting brighter that time, and we can see what's happening. So then from 8 o'clock until midday, maybe 1 o'clock, we train the horses, which I think is a sensible time.
And when, you know, others have already retired for the day.
Say that again.
When other trainers might have already retired for the day.
Yeah. A lot of people do things a lot earlier. But we're lucky enough down the country, we have our own gallops and facilities. So we're not rushing out to get the best of the ground and things like that. But especially in wintertime, I think there's no need to be. You can't see much at 6 o'clock in the morning on the gallops, anyway, unless you have all weather lighting. But
now I've been looking back at your career, and I mean, you follow in your father's footsteps as a trainer, but it wasn't easy. When reading about you getting your first license, you had to tell a little fib.
You had to have 12 horses to get your trainer's license. And
how many did you have?
I think we had about maybe 8 or 9, and then one of them was a brood mare, and another one was a retired racehorse, and I think the 12th name might have been a horse that had recently passed away, but we still had the we put his name in, and anyhow, we got our license, and everyone has to start somewhere.
Yeah, indeed. The story goes, now maybe it's not true, that the guy came along to inspect your yard and the stabling and so on, and count the number of horses. He was wearing rather fine shoes.
Yes.
Is that true?
It is. And of course, you've got to have fences and hurdles and starting stalls. And Stephen Quirk, who was a fantastic trainer himself, but he was always very well dressed, immaculately turned out. And I said to him, you know, he said, Willie, where are all the fences and hurdles? And I pointed to a field, about 3 fields away. I said, they're down there. And it was a real wet morning like this morning. I said, Stephen, I don't think those shoes are going to manage that. We might go inside for a drink and a bit of lunch or something. And he took the better option. So I got away with murder on the day anyhow. But that was years ago. It wouldn't happen, I think, nowadays.
Now, tell me, was it inevitable? I mean, you were a jockey first before a trainer. Was it inevitable that you'd go into, I suppose, the family business?
Yes, well, I was an amateur rider. But and then my father's assistant. I spent a year with Jim Bulger as well, up in Clonsilla. So I came home then after that and got married and had to earn a living. So I had to start on my own. And myself and Jackie started here at Close Sutton about 35 years ago.
And Jackie, your wife, rides as well and was a jockey.
Yes, Jackie was champion lady amateur, I think, on one occasion. So, or maybe more, but a very good rider.
Now, when we're looking at the Cheltenham Festival or any of the racing festivals, And you see the number of females working. I mean, it seems maybe not on the face of it, but in the detail of it, a very egalitarian sport for job opportunity.
It is. I mean, it's considered a men's sport most of the time, but looking at my staff here at the moment, it's nearly 50-50, just a few more men rather than girls. But, you know, they compete here on, and you know, on a level playing field. You look at Rachel Blackmore, who, you know, she's won everything. She's won the Grand National, the Gold Cup, champion hurdle. You can't get more than that. And there's some very good girls riding at the moment. I've Jodie Townsend, who's been lady champion amateur, Paul's sister, and, you know, she's well able to hold her own against any of the men.
Now, when I look at all at the records that you've broken and the number of winners in any given season, it's phenomenal. And indeed, the prize money that you've amassed, I think I heard Ivan Yeh say last night, and I checked it just to be sure this morning, over five seasons, you might have taken 27 million in winnings. So you're hugely successful for your owners.
Yes, of course, that's for the owners. You know, I get a percentage of that. But it is a lot of money, and it just shows what is there. But so we're very lucky in Ireland to have the backing of the government, who give a good grant to racing. But it's also so, you know, it's worth the money, because I think on a recent Deloitte presentation, you know, they showed that for every euro given, that the racing industry gives back 35 euros. So to have an industry spread all over rural Ireland and in all the small villages and local towns, that all that prize money seeps out, and it's worth so much to the local economies in these small villages around here. And the breeding industry, you know, it contributes so much as well. So it's a fantastic.
You know, the way it used to be referred to as the sport of kings, and many people have the idea that it's the sport of toffs, but that's not the reality. And particularly, I suppose, if you go to somewhere like at the Cheltenham Festival, all kinds meet and mix.
Exactly. Since the Celtic Tiger came in, the amount of Irish people that now own horses. And, you know, the country's got wealthier and people can afford it. And it's certainly not the sport of toffs compared to what it used to be, maybe.
Yeah. Now, you have famously said, you know, when trying to run your organization, you can give me a good horse, but I would prefer a good owner. What do you mean?
I think people... And that's why I love the game. You meet so many lovely people. You can have a good horse with an owner who is not good, who's miserable and probably makes your life a misery by changing jockeys and telling you where he wants his horse to run, maybe where it's not the proper place for the horse to run. And I always think even if a good owner has a bad horse, well, that horse will pass on and he'll buy another horse and he'll get a better horse down the line, whereas... When you're doing business with people, and if they're not nice, it makes, you know, it makes your life a misery. So I always like to have nice people, and I've got a really nice bunch of people who have horses with me at the moment. And I think any trainer will tell you that, and any business person will tell you that it's really easy to work with nice people. And to me, that's number one.
Yeah. Now, there was a famous crisis you had at your yard when Michael O'Leary decided he was going to downsize. He was ultimately going to get out of racing, and you were the first casualty.
Yes, but that happens. You know, every walk of life, people have major traumas, and Michael had his reasons for doing what he did. And but
is he back with you?
He's had a change of heart, and I think maybe his kids were growing up, and he wanted more time to have with his family, and now they've grown up, and he's getting back into the sport a little more. Mm. Not as big as he was, but certainly he has a huge interest in it.
There was something about you wanted to raise your prices to reflect the increased costs in your yard, and he wasn't having it.
Well, you know, Anyhow, that's another part of the story. But there we are. You make some decisions in any business and they don't always work out.
Now, obviously, when the time is appropriate, you will wear the top hat and so on. But most of your headwear, the fedora that you choose, which is your trademark. When did you start that?
I'd say I was about 18 or 19 going to Tramore races one day. And it was absolutely tipping down. And I just stopped on the quay in Waterford, ran into whatever shop was there. And they had hats for sale, which I don't know if you'd find them in any town nowadays. Very few hat shops around. And I just bought it there. And I've worn a hat ever since. I very seldom wear a cap. I wear a cap at home, all right. But I always just worn a hat racing.
Now, the ones you've left behind, there are very few, but there are a couple of titles you'd like to have in your locker. And, the Melbourne Cup, I suppose, is one. Are there others?
Yes, I'd love to win the Ascot Gold Cup and probably the French Gold Cup. So two that I'd like to win. Well, three, including the Melbourne Cup. So we've been second in Melbourne Cup and beaten a short head in the Ascot Gold Cup. Haven't been as lucky in the French Gold Cup yet, but they're targets to look forward to.
It must be particularly hard, the Melbourne Cup, because you've got to move an animal halfway around the world, and I presume they suffer from jet lag just like humans do.
They do, but the real hard part is the quarantine, that we've got to go into quarantine for 2 weeks before they travel, so we've got to send them to Newmarket. So they go to Newmarket and then they go on to Australia. But on the way, like, it's a huge journey for horses. They take off. Sometimes they might have to go to Belgium to fly out to Qatar and then maybe stop off in Singapore and then stop off in Sydney and then get down to Melbourne. It's a lot of traveling, and sort of a rule of thumb, if your horse can arrive less than 20 kilos lighter than he started, you have a great chance. You get about 3 weeks to recover from all that and try and train him as well. So
that weight loss indicates stress.
Yes, you've got that's the, and you know, you can't put on too much weight quickly, but they will try and put it on. But anyhow, it's just part and parcel of getting over the stress of traveling.
Now, so many records, as I said at the beginning, Willie, and, there's no doubt it'll be very difficult for any trainer in the future to surpass what you've achieved. No sign of stopping, though.
No, I enjoy it. My son is helping me here, assistant trainer, and then David Casey, assistant trainer, and Ruby Walsh comes in about 3 days a week, and he's a huge help. And We've got a fantastic team of people here. We've got, fantastic owners and brilliant horses. So I haven't thought about it yet. Anyhow, enjoying it.
Well, Willie, long may you prosper and succeed and add more winners to that incredibly long list. And once again, I want to thank you for everything you've done. And you merited that standing ovation last night at the Business and Finance Awards at the Convention Centre. A huge enthusiasm from the crowd.
Thank you. That was a surprise. All right.
Well, look, thank you very much for making time for us this morning. You probably had to delay some of your activities to talk to me, but I appreciate it. Willie Mullins, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.